Hey, Steve here, and this is episode 50, yes, 50 of Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. Oh my gosh, over a year ago we started doing this podcast, and I never thought I'd see this day, but here we are. We have 50, count them, 50 episodes in the tank, and I hope that you go through. If you haven't listened to all of them, I hope you go back and check out all of them. I think we've gotten better as each one has come forward. So, today we have Jeffrey Stillwell, who is the founder of Accident Avoidance Workshops. He's a professional driving instructor. And I got to tell you, as a principal, I stumbled into Jeffrey, and we were able to bring him to our school, and he works with parents and students, their children, and he teaches them how to deal with those situations that cause accidents. In other words, he helps them figure out what to do when everything goes horribly wrong. He is something else. People describe him as fun, caring, inspiring, and just nutty. He is fun all the time, and I think you're going to enjoy this episode. You're going to learn a lot, and I challenge you at the end, think about bringing him to your school or community because it will pay off in the safety of your children. Enjoy.
They're not here for us. We're here for them. That's what it's about. Kids.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is all about assisting classroom teachers and school administrators to overcome the many walls or barriers that kids face. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is focused on helping you help kids achieve their dreams. As a note, I hope that you will stop by Stitcher or iTunes and leave me a star rating and a comment. That helps the show get noticed by more people. Thanks for listening and joining me week after week.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, Steve here with Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, and today I'm with Jeffrey Stillwell, also known as Homer. He's a professional driving instructor. He teaches kids and their parents how to avoid accidents and survive the unexpected. The beginning of his company, Accident Avoidance Workshop, started back in 1994 when he founded Stillwell Racing Enterprises. I got to tell you something, as a principal, I was able to work with him in two different schools, and it's funny, but the kids and the parents, if you were to ask them to use adjectives to describe him, you would hear fun, caring, nut, and inspiring. He has a background in suspension, construction, and racing, which I can't wait to ask him about that. He is definitely a people person, and you got to know this. In his background, he even has been the track announcer at Bristol Motor Speedway. And also, one other thing that we're going to make sure we get him talking about is that he likes racing slot cars. All right, so we're going to get him talking about that. So, without further ado, say hi to everybody, Homer.
So, that sounds like an incredible guy. When do I get to meet him?
Well, if
hello, everybody.
There he goes. A little worried that we got multiple personalities happening there. So,
how are you, Steve?
Doing good. I appreciate you spending some time with me this evening there, Homer, and we've, it's been great over the last bunch of years now. I can remember back when you first got introduced to me, and I've seen the positive impact you've brought to kids in different communities, and just the wonderfulness of the programs that you bring, as well as the caring attitude that you bring to helping children and families. And I greatly appreciate you spending time with me today.
I will spend the rest of my days trying to live up to that reputation you've just given me. I appreciate that.
Not a problem. You know, what I'd like to do, first of all, is just tell our audience just a little bit about your background before we get into the business. And if you'd make sure that you say a little bit about the Homer label.
Oh, the Homer label. Good heavens. My background is predominantly in automotive. I spent many years standing behind a counter in the retail auto parts industry. I worked for companies that designed car dealerships. Worked for companies that designed suspension systems for race cars. I've been involved with the Georgia State Patrol. Done my share of crash investigations, and basically everything that I've done has kind of led to where I am today. So it's kind of a destiny fulfilled deal, but actually was misplaced for about 5 years. I went to work for Home Depot's corporate headquarters up here in Atlanta. And I worked in the advertising department, and I was one of the few that they actually allowed to put on the mascot's outfit and go to the children's hospitals and entertain the kids.
Nice.
And the mascot for Home Depot is a guy by the name of Homer D. Poe, if you get that. Easily remembered.
Yes.
And it just kind of stuck. And about the time I got out of Home Depot, they were getting out of using Homer and the advertising stuff, so I just kind of took the name with me. My real name, of course, as you know, is Jeffrey Stillwell, but all my friends call me Homer. So therein lies the story behind that.
Very nice. Appreciate you sharing that. So, you know, one of the things that's very obvious about you is that you have a background in cars and automotives, and it touches on racing and all that stuff. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. My father used to race sprint cars back in the Midwest, and therein came my love for anything mechanical. I have a very unusual set of skills that kind of favor what I do for a living now, and that is the automotive engineering and mechanical came from my father, and yet the interaction with the people came from my mother. So I guess that's one of the reasons I relate so well with the kids is I was always raised where I'm trying to think about what others are thinking. You spend more time thinking about others than yourself, and you wind up pretty well aimed in life. But yeah, the love for cars came from Dad, and that's where I spend most of my career days.
Very cool. So for those of us who don't know, namely me, what's a sprint car?
Sprint car. Well, they're a little bit different these days than they are than they were when my dad was racing. Sprint cars today are predominantly raced on dirt tracks. They are transmissionless cars that you have to bump start to get going, and if they ever stop, you stall the engine. In other words, they're direct drive. And these cars have giant wings on the top of them that actually keep them from turning over sideways when they go onto a corner.
Oh, cool.
Tony Stewart actually is a well-recognized sprint car racer and also owns Eldora Speedway. So that's, I think, really dirt racing, predominantly sprint car racing, is where he came from, as well as Jeff Gordon, by the way.
Oh, very cool. So now with that description, I know what you're talking about. I've seen those cars. Very cool.
Okay, sure.
They tend not to come with airbags, though, right?
No. In fact, when I lived back in Minnesota, Raceway Park was a track that I used to like to go to, and every so often I'd walk up into the announce booth, and the guy behind the microphone was the guy who announced when my dad raced. And he told me that one time Dad came out of turn two sideways, went down to the infield, hit a combine, and flipped it over and landed on his head. This is before roll cages.
Wow.
And, yeah, he says, boy, he was loopy for about a week. I said, well, that explains an awful lot, though. I appreciate that information.
Nice. Very nice. So that, now I understand a little bit about that accent you have. That's not a South Carolina accent, is it?
Nah, Minnesota. You can always tell a Minnesotan. You just can't tell them much.
Very nice. Ba-dum-bum. I like that. We got
so, I think it was originally said of the Irish, but of course I'm Irish too, so I guess I get a double whammy on that one.
Very nice, very nice. So so tell me, ultimately, how does your love of cars and working with cars come together with teaching young people?
Very simple. Back in 1994, there was a crash in Roswell. Four kids in a BMW perished after they lost control and hit a tree. And I remember where I was when I read that, and I remember thinking, why don't parents inherently know that you don't give a 16-year-old a BMW? I don't understand this. And I vowed at that point that I said, I got to put a class together, right? Even if it's just classroom. I need to put something together to help today's parents understand the mechanical, the automotive, the engineering side of driving as I understand it. Maybe that would help them make better decisions when it comes down to that. So I started, I remember in 1995 at my awards banquet here in the basement of my house for my model car racing. I said, I'm putting this class together. I have no idea how it's going to work. And sure enough, as things went on, the program evolved and some things started laying themselves out in the way. And next thing I know, all the stars have lined up and I wind up doing this. So I don't know. I just wanted people to understand driving the way that I've been led to understand it with my background. So this is, the program that we have is very much research-based. We've looked at what type of crashes are happening and what's the number one killer and what can be done to prevent them, and that's what's driven the content of the accident avoidance workshops.
Excellent. So So can you go into just a little more detail about the business then? Let's use that as a segue.
Sure, absolutely. This is Accident Avoidance Workshops. You, of all people, will appreciate this, Steve. It was most recently coined as the AP of Driver Education.
Cool.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
Yeah,
it
it's
makes
nice.
All the sense in the world. Driver's education, if you want to drive in Georgia, for example, when you're 16,
but
the absolute minimum requirements you have to have is you have to have 30 hours of driver's ed classes, you have to have 6 hours behind the wheel, and you have to have 40 hours supervised by a parent. And if that's all you do, then all you have is a minimum trained student. But there are a lot of parents out there who know that the same driver training program that we took 30 years ago isn't good enough for today's roads because the roads have changed, the class has not. So they're looking for something else they can do. And what I help them understand is that there are two levels of situations you need to train your student for. One, yes, granted, you need to have driver's ed. You need to understand what do the lines mean, what do the signs mean, and how do you operate the vehicle. But operating the vehicle and driving the car are two different things. How do you understand the limits of what that car can and can't do so that you don't exceed those limits and crash? What do you do when everything goes horribly wrong in front of you? And that's when it was coined there were two different types of driving conditions, normal driving conditions and emergency driving conditions. And if all you do is driver's ed, then all you're trained for is normal driving conditions. You have no clue what to do when everything goes horribly wrong. So that's what we do.
Very nice. I think that's a great way of describing it, that what, you know, teaching them what to do when everything goes horribly wrong. I like that. That's
right.
That's good there. So your business revolves around bringing training to kids in their schools and their community, right?
Exactly.
So why would schools want to invite you to teach their kids?
Steve, I've been in the high schools when they lost a kid, and I know what it looks like and what it feels like to have everyone in the school, teachers and students alike, wearing black shirts with the student's name on it. It's heart-wrenching. You know what it's like to be in a high school and have the bell ring and have everybody change classes and never hear anybody say anything? It's terrible.
Right.
It's the worst thing that can ever happen. And, you know, actually, you said it best to me one time when you were at a high school up in Fulton County. You said, my kid's safety is the number one concern I have. Why wouldn't I bring this program to my school? Especially when you consider that car crashes are the number one killer of teens. That should be the first thing on a principal's priority list, is to make this training available to them. Then, at least if something goes wrong, the principal did his part, and if the parents chose not to take it, then that's their decision. But it certainly wasn't as a shortcoming of the principal. Not only that, but when we bring this program, as you know, the principals just get riddled with thank you letters from the parents and the kids saying, "Man, this was great."
Oh,
so, I'm not trying to blow my own horn here, but there is a lot of gravity on doing this and making that training available to the students in the school.
Most definitely. I've seen Jeffrey's program and what it does for kids and their parents, and I've seen the results, and he's not kidding. I mean, the families come up to you afterwards and say, you just can't thank you enough for coming to the school and to the community and providing the service. And that's going to lead me to asking this, which is, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, what is it that kids get out of this program, about what you do? What is it that you do for them? What do they get out of it?
Well, that's a perfect question on the heels of the one you just asked me, because you asked me the question, why would a school want to do this? And I answered the question you thought you asked. But the answer to the question you actually asked is, why would they do it at school? What do the kids get out of it? They get advanced training in emergency driving situations. They become better drivers. Statistically, they reduce the likelihood of ever being involved in a crash by more than 75%. It can put up to $1,700 into the school and its PTSA and all of its booster clubs in a single weekend just for hosting it one weekend a year. And it helps the students and the parents cut their insurance rates by anywhere between $500 and $1,500 a year.
Wow.
For 3 years in a row. So this is not a cost center. This is a revenue stream. I was presenting this to one school, and the principal made a very profound statement. He says, okay, well, we got different demographics of parents in our school. There are some parents who can afford to take this, and there's a whole other set of parents who can't afford not to take it. I go, yeah, you're exactly right. you're that's exactly right.
Right. That's That's pretty wild, because that's not what I thought you were getting ready to say. You threw
what,
for a loop there.
What did you think I was getting ready to say?
The direction it was going, which is there's a group of parents that can afford it, and there's a group of parents that can't. And I was like,
oh, yeah, right. So that, yeah, it was a paradigm shift for me. It's always interesting to hear how other people view it when they hear about it.
Most definitely. One of the things that is just amazing to me, because one of the things I want to talk about is how the program works, because you actually have, when you set up in a school in a community, they you actually have a classroom night where the parent has to attend with the child, or a guardian or whatever, has to attend with the child, and then they come on a Saturday or Sunday to wherever you're set up, typically at a big parking lot someplace, oftentimes the school. So tell me about that. The whole thought between what happens in the classroom and what happens in the parking lot. But especially before you go too deep into that, I want you to explain why the parent has to be with them.
Absolutely. The coolest part of this program that's very difficult to quantify and explain to anybody until they've taken it is that by the end of the workshops, the parents are going to be able to talk to their kids about driving again without getting the attitude. And invariably, all the parents kind of look sideways at each other when they say it, because they're like, how in the world is it going to make that happen? Well, the thing of it is, there's an inherent communication gap that's between the parents and the kids. And we all know this. This is the age when they start leaving the nest. This is when the quote-unquote great divide happens, right?
Right.
They're trying to branch off and be independent. And there's a giant communication gap between them. And you know what this gap is like, because the parent says, watch out for that. And the kid says, I know. Would you let me drive? I know what I'm doing. there's never been a kid on the planet that's ever needed to take this class. They're all good drivers. If you doubt me, just ask one. They'll tell you.
Exactly.
What I do is I spend the 8 hours in the workshops demoting the parent to the role of student as well.
Nice.
So by the time the workshops are over, the parents are going, I can't believe I learned as much as I did in this class. And they both leave as students of driving.
Excellent.
And goodbye communication gap. And then the next time they're driving down the road, it's not the parents saying, did you see the, and the kids going, I know. It's the parents saying, man, did you see the, and the kids going, I know. It's an entirely different conversation.
That's awesome what you just explained, because I understand that feeling. I got to just get you to talk a little bit about this. What kind of fascinates you about this process? Because all you got to do is be a fly on the wall and in your training sessions, and it's obvious that you love what you're doing. So what is it that fascinates you about it? What is it that just really keeps you rocking at doing it?
Fulfillment. You don't understand what it's like to finish a workshop and have a mom come up to you crying in your arms, thanking you for saving her kid's life.
Nice.
And I've had that happen. And I constantly get phone calls and emails from people that say, the class just paid for itself 10 times over today.
Wow.
And when you're walking around in the parking lot at the end of one of these workshops, Stephen, I'm just picking up cones, that's God time for me. That's when I feel the hand on the back of my shoulder saying, Homer, this is why I got you doing what you're doing right now. I remember many years ago when I was considering subcontracting myself out to a company that did the diluted version of the workshops, and because I needed to do something while I was going back to school to finish my degree in mathematics. And I remember looking at that webpage, and I remember saying to myself, who in God's name would ever want that job? But let me tell you something. It has a way of changing your heart over the years. And now I give up all of my weekends, and I can't wait for the next one. And that is where I have the most fun. That is where my value is. I've had people call this my mission. I've had people call it my calling. And when you're doing what you love to do, you're just naturally going to be better at it than a guy who doesn't love it. And I think that's why we have 7,300 people on the waiting list to take the workshops.
Wow.
If they all signed up today, it'd be 10 years before I was done training everybody.
Wow.
So most of our customers come from word of mouth. Somebody's taken it, and they call their friends when they get home, and they said, you got to go do this.
If you could only give one point of advice, you have some sort of restraining thing around you that says, only one thing you can say to young drivers, what would that advice be?
Easy. Know your limits. what you can and can't do.
Nice.
Know what the car can and can't do. How in the world can one possibly expect you to know how to react in a situation if you've never been in that situation before? It's a completely unreasonable expectation.
You got that right.
I expect you to be a master ski jumper, but I've never ski jumped. Doesn't matter. I expect you to be a master ski jumper. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So how in the world can I possibly expect a student to know how to handle an emergency situation if they've never faced one? Most kids just freeze, lock up, and they slam on the brakes, skid the tires. They've exceeded the limits of the braking. They've exceeded the limits of maneuverability. They follow too close. They've exceeded the limits of following distance. And, you know, the number one ticket given is for following too closely because they don't know the limits. They have no idea how long it takes to stop the car because they've never done it in a controlled environment and got out and looked back and said, there's my following distance. That's what I need to be doing. So there's your advice. Know your limits.
Awesome advice. As a note, I already know the answer to this, but I'm guessing that in your workshop, they get a chance to see the limits of their vehicle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. By the end of the workshops, the biggest takeaway is going to be that they know how to stop that car as hard as it can physically be stopped, use all of its maneuverability in the process, showing the limits of maneuverability, and never once lose control of the vehicle. Now, shouldn't everybody have to be able to show someone they're capable of doing that before you're allowed to drive amongst others?
You would think. You would think.
Well, they don't care.
Yeah, especially.
Well, the parents do, and that's why I have a job.
Especially because, you know, I like to call SUVs aircraft carriers. People drive some of these giant aircraft carriers, and I think they've left some of their gray matter somewhere else.
I'm with you.
That wasn't a little biased, was it? Was that a little? Never mind.
Not at all.
Just a little bit of my opinion. So I just asked you a second ago to give advice to young drivers. If you were to give parents a nugget of advice for helping their kids become better drivers, what would that be?
Again, very simple. Prioritize. If your kid misses a basketball game, what's the worst possible scenario? If your kid misses training on what to do when everything goes horribly wrong, what's the worst possible scenario? I had a young lady signed up for a workshop at Bristol Motor Speedway last fall. 2 days before the workshops, her dad called and said, we've got to pull out because the coach has called a mandatory volleyball practice. They withdrew from class. 3 weeks later, she dropped two wheels off the side of the road, overcorrected, and was killed in a head-on collision.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, but you've got to look at the bright side. At least she made the volleyball practice. You see how ridiculous that sounds when you actually put it the words?
Oh, yeah.
7,300 people on my waiting list can't seem to get off the ball and make this a priority because we are all so self-important and wrapped up in what we think is important. We're just smothered with this "it won't happen to me" syndrome. And I got news for you. It will happen to you. If you ask any parent out there, how many of you have never been in a crash? Rarely does a hand go up. It does happen. But we think we're invincible, and we're not.
No.
Prioritize. Just figure out where your family's safety ranks in the priority of things that you need to manage on an everyday basis and figure out what it would cost if your family was never complete again and prioritize.
That's great advice. All right, so we're getting a little somber here, so I need to rev it up just a little bit.
Okay.
Like my use of racing terms like that. I got a whole...
Yeah, I like that. You must be segueing into something pretty interesting.
Yes, and so... One of the things that you have as a side hobby, or actually, I think you're a professional at this, is that you also like to race slot cars or model cars, and so you got to talk about that a little bit.
The lower level of my home is the nation's largest corporate-sponsored HO scale model road racing facility. This is 1,700 square feet of 8-year-old paradise, or as I refer to it. It's just a hobby gone horribly awry. So, yes, you're right. I love all things automotive, and what does a guy do in his spare time? I play with little cars. I get to play with big cars on the weekend and little cars on the during the week.
You got to love it. And the reason why I know about this is because Jeffrey opened his basement to me when I was a principal, and we did a team building exercise there, which basically was all of us becoming 8-year-olds and racing slot cars and having a blast, which I'll never forget. I actually won a race, which I kind of think had more to do with others letting me win.
Yeah, the sandbagging was masterful. It was like you know, unless you were looking for it, you couldn't even see it. So it was, it was amazing.
Hey, I am here, you know. But oh my gosh, just amazing. And this is I got to tell you, as someone who used to just have I loved having AFXs and the little tracks and the slot car tracks and all that stuff.
Old cycle tracks.
Yeah, exactly. Just love that stuff. To have it all there in real life, set up, going to curves, flying off the curves, just nothing. It's nothing better than being there with a group of friends and having a good time and really figuring out that this track, even though they're little toys, it can humble you because it is going to show that you have no power to make that S curve, or you're just
right.
embarrass you in front of everybody. I can do this. No, you can't. Yeah, watch this.
Well, and the thing of it is, it's very difficult to paint a picture of that. But let me try anyway. Your listeners may have remembered what it's like to go to Toys R Us or whatever and buy a little 2-lane slot car track.
Yes.
And set it up on your dining room table. And it's got 2 lanes, and it's got a controller, and of course, the harder you squeeze the controller, the faster the car goes. You can go fast in the straights, but you can't go fast in the corners, of course. Now, what you have to picture is that this track is not 2 lanes wide. It's 6 lanes wide. And it doesn't have 4 turns. It has 17 turns. And it's not on the dining room table. It's on a 6-foot by 30-foot table. And cars, when we host the Nationals down here, the track is 102 running feet, 17 turns. And when we host the Nationals, I believe the pole speed, fastest qualifier, did it in 2.8 seconds.
Wow.
So, yes, it is all about setting the car up. It's all about getting the center of gravity low. It's all about not exceeding the coefficient of friction getting through the corners. It's about knowing where your braking point is, knowing where the apex is, knowing where your acceleration point is. Are you starting to see some similarities between this and the accident avoidance workshops?
Most definitely.
It's the same stuff. It's just smaller numbers. And it's a lot more fun, too.
Yeah. Most definitely. I've having experienced that, yes. That's a little less scary consequences if you wreck in that in your basement.
And there's not too much more fun than seeing a half a dozen grown adults standing around screaming and hollering little cars either.
Exactly.
That's therapeutic.
Stay on the track. I'm doing what I have to. I've given her all she's got, Captain, but she's not taking it. I don't know. How's that for a terrible Scotty?
But I knew where you were going with that. But yeah, we've done team building here for some computer companies. We've done team building here for Bell South was down here in my basement. Fox 5 has been here in my basement. They broadcast the morning show from here.
Excellent.
Of course, you've been here, and I've got other high schools going to bring their administrators over here. It's fun being 8 years old again.
That it is. And I got to tell you, I appreciate that experience you gave us and the fact that you do that for other people, because that is a, you know, talk about making your cares go away for a while.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Most definitely. A lot of fun. So if a teacher, an administrator, student, parent, wanted to get you to come to their school, what would they need to do?
Oh, this is so ridiculously simple, it's not even funny. I can go right now. I've set up to go anywhere within a 5-hour driving radius from Atlanta. And all that has to happen is that I need to be invited by the school. And they call me up and they say, hey, I'm at Smithfield High School in Birmingham, Alabama. That's fine. I pull it up on Google. I look at the parking lot. I can tell right away if we have the facilities to be able to do it there, because I do need a certain amount of room, and not all the schools are laid out the same. So not every school is capable of hosting the workshops. But there's many cases where one that can't do the driving portion will partner with a neighboring school that can. And we do the classroom at the school that can't host the driving portion, and we do the driving session at the school that can, and it winds up being a co-op kind of deal. And that works out pretty well, too, because, you know, as we sign people up, we give rebates back to the school. And that can add up to, you know, $1,700 for a school in a single weekend. And I've been part of these fundraisers, Steve. I know how many Papa John's pizzas you need to sling to get $1,700.
Never mind Papa John's. How about Krispy Kreme donuts?
Right. Oh, there you go. Now you hit my weak spot. But yeah, the school just says, hey, we want you on this weekend. And, you know, I work with them to figure out a mutually convenient weekend. And once they pick the weekend, and they all they need to do is tell me the classroom's going to be on a Tuesday night or Wednesday night or something like this, and then I'll have the parking lot free that weekend. Then I work with their PTA and just send out all the emails to the parents and say, hey, you need to sign up for this thing. And then I rebate the PTA based on how many people signed up. But also, any internal school organization can use this as a fundraiser, too. They just go to my website and say, hey, Johns Creek Marching Band wants to use this as a fundraiser. And here's the email address, who we want the check sent to, and where we want it sent. And then I send them the schedule every 2 weeks. They can forward it out to whoever they want. They can be as aggressive with this thing as they want. But everybody who says, I heard about this from Johns Creek Marching Band, puts $10 in the marching band. It's just so ridiculously simple. It's nice when you own your own company, Steve. You can just make things simple.
I like that.
It's just so easy, you know.
Very nice. And it's awesome that you do that because there's not a lot of people who would do, and you do give back, and that is awesome.
Well, and any parent that does make this happen, that actually sets the appointment with the principal and the PTA and invites me there and gets me in there, then their student is going through it on me.
Nice.
So I'm perfectly happy to put my money where my mouth is. There's always a spot we leave available for a PTA officer. There's always a spot we leave available for the school administrator to decide if there's some teacher in a school that has a kid they want to put through it. And I pick up the tab for those as well. So you got to give back to these folks. They're the one doing all the work, and I'm happy to help them.
Very nice. As we are getting ready to close here, I got two last things to touch on. Number one, where can our listeners find you on the web?
www.accidentavoidanceworkshops.org. And workshops is plural. Accident is not. And it is a .org address. So as long as you remember workshops and .org, you probably get there. But also, there's a Facebook page out there with some pictures that some of the parents have put up. It's pretty interesting. So, yeah, we have our own webpage, and we're on Facebook.
Excellent. And all this will be in the show notes as well. We'll have some pictures as well as the links to the Facebook page.
Terrific.
And the and your website. So, and then on the website, there's also a phone number. And so another way that they can get in touch with you.
Right, exactly.
Excellent. So in closing, what I'd like you to do, I'd like to ask my guests this question. When you were in school, K through 12 or college, was there a teacher or a professor who made a major impact on you or a difference? Someone who you would thank if given the chance? And if so, what would you say and why?
Wow. Yeah, the first name that pops out is Mr. Hoover. Kennesaw State University calculus professor. I went back to school to trade in my marketing and education for a degree in mathematics back in 2005, and finally graduated with a degree in 2008. But when I went back, I said, "Gosh, you know, I took pre-calculus, you know, what, 20 years ago. Now I know for a degree in math, I'm going to have to take Calc 1, 2, and 3. So you know what? I'm going to go back and retake pre-calc just to make sure that I'm fresh."
Wise.
Yeah, and in doing so, I found out that Kennesaw State University had a math lab, and that's where all of the advanced math students go up and they put on smocks and they go around and help grunts like me trying to beat my way through an education. And when I found that, I was home free. But I asked one of the guys in the math lab, I said, you know, I'm really nervous about this calculus thing because calculus is a real scary word to me. Who do you recommend that I take as a professor for Calc 1? That would probably not be so mathematically oriented, but more student oriented. And he said, oh, that's easy, Mr. Hoover. You got to take Mr. Hoover. I said, oh, what kind of teacher is Dr. Hoover? He said, nope, it's not Dr. Hoover. It's Mr. Hoover. I said, really? Because Kennesaw usually has doctors for teachers. And so to come to find out, Mr. Hoover only had a master's degree, didn't have a doctorate, but he's an ex-Navy test pilot. And He wanted to teach Calc 1 and 2, but since he didn't have a doctorate, the school would not release him to teach Calc 2, so he was limited to Calc 1. So my class was the 11 o'clock Monday and Wednesday class, and I showed up for the 11 o'clock class, and as is typical of my learning style, I always go down and introduce myself to the professor after class, volunteer just unconditionally. If you ever need somebody to come up to the board to work something, let me know. I'm not afraid of embarrassing myself or anything like that, I'm here. If I don't get A's on everything, I feel like I got cheated out of something. Isn't it funny how your study habits change over the years?
Yes, yes.
But I told him, I said, listen, Mr. Hoover, I said, I'm really nervous about this. Do you teach any other sections of this? He says, oh, yeah, we teach the exact same class at 7:30 in the morning, as well as the 11 o'clock class. I said, well, would you mind if I came to both classes until I get my head around this? He says, you are welcome to do that all you want. I said, I promise I'll reserve my questions until the class that I paid for. He says, no, you ask anything you want anytime.
Excellent.
I said, okay, well, thanks. Well, Stephen, going to these classes, what wound up happening, I wound up going to both classes all semester long. But I went to the 7:30 class to learn calculus, and I went to the 11 o'clock class to learn how to teach. Because this guy's classroom management skills were second to none.
Excellent.
He would sit there and he'd watch the class, and you know how the class kind of glazes over every now and then?
Yes.
And he'd pick up on that, and he'd put his marker down, and he'd say, you know, when I was a test pilot, we had this situation where, and I'd go, holy cow, what's he talking about now? And everybody would go, what, and they'd all wake back up, he'd tell the story, and everybody would bust up laughing, and then he'd pick up his marker, and he'd go right back into it. And it would, the kids in the class were, you know, college kids. They didn't even know how they were being manipulated. He was the master at it. And later on, they had it was the next year, I believe, they had a Distinguished Professor of the Year competition for the School of Science and Mathematics. And I had already told this story to one of the directors of the department, and they said, you need to nominate Mr. Hoover for that. I think the school would at least like hearing that story. So I wrote up the whole story about how I went to every class that he had and how I recommend anybody who's going to become a teacher needs to spend an entire semester just watching him teach. And as a result of that nomination, he wound up winning the Distinguished Professor of the Year Award, but more importantly, they wound up releasing him to teach Calc 2, which is what he wanted all along anyway.
Wow.
So, yes, I wound up inviting Mr. Hoover to my graduation in 2008. And what I didn't know is that the stole that you get is not yours to keep. Tradition has it. You're supposed to give it to somebody who offered great support in your education. So I gave it to Mr. Hoover, and I had embroidered on the back of it, I learned more from you than anybody else.
Very cool. That's awesome.
So there's your story. So, yeah, one guy can make a big difference.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
Sure.
Jeffrey, Homer, it's just been awesome. I'd love catching up with you here, and I thank you so much for spending time and keep doing the wonderful things that you're doing for families and their kids and helping people avoid those horribly wrong days.
I appreciate the kind words, Steve. You never cease to amaze me when it comes down to exceeding the expectations of what I would expect from an administrator, and you did that when you were in the high schools up here. And you continue to do it when you're down there. I appreciate everything you're doing as well.
Well, thank you so much. You're too kind, and I wish you the best. And you know, just keep doing what you do. I appreciate it, Jeffrey. Thank you so much for today.
You're welcome, Steve. Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 in the iTunes Store. Check back often for updates and new material.
Hang tight, everyone. I'm going to let go of the wall.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the heart of Georgia Precinct.